Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And today we want to be talking about some developments of a sort of tragic, but of course, a type of moment that comes. The Kenneth Kaunda, one of the fathers of African liberation, has died in his homeland of Zambia, 97 years old. And if there's a proverb to describe him, I think it would be, "This old anvil laughs at many broken hammers." He was one of the great fighters. He did it in a mostly peaceful way. His manner, his character was so powerful. It influenced so many people. I would urge listeners, put in the name Martin Luther King and Kenneth Kaunda, and you'll see some beautiful photographs. And you can tell that Martin Luther King was very happy and very proud to be sitting alongside Kenneth Kaunda. The country he came from was once called Rhodesia, and he was the leader of the Rhodesian African Congress. So we have a lot to talk about because I want to link that to the return of Mr. Gbagbo to Ivory Coast, which I see as one of the reasons that the old anvil would laugh at the broken hammers, because they went after Kenneth Kaunda. They went after him very heavy, but he outlived most of the people who tried to get him. And what he stood for in Africa is returning to Africa. So I think it's a great thing. We'll be talking about him, and we'll bring in Winston Churchill too. And later in the show, we'll also talk about, of course, Mr. Biden meets Mr. Putin. And I guess we'll talk about the press conferences, because of course, nothing really happened at the meeting that anybody can make out. For Canadians, this is very important because Biden is our president, makes all the major decisions for us. So it's very important. But I think we might have learned a lot from the press conferences, and we'll get to that later in the show. Now, I want to take up the meeting that just happened. I guess it was a Zoom meeting of more than 4,000 members of the Canadian Labour Congress. And I guess the headline I would put on it is that the CLC seems to have a pulse. We had been worried on the Taylor Report whether there was any pulse, but there's some signs. I might be mistaken. But we're joined by Tony Leah, who knows more about these things than we do. Tony Leah is from Local 222, General Motors, Oshawa. Tony, welcome to the show.
I feel glad to be here.
We were speaking to you quite recently by the way, you have some labor developments to tell us about, I understand. We were talking about this curse of the tier system, the two-tier, three-tier, four-tier pay system that crept into Ontario and is parked here now and won't go away, like a noxious gas or fog, I guess, London fog, whereas it doesn't seem to exist in Quebec. We talked to you about that. But of course, today we want to talk about the Canadian Labour Congress as well. Maybe let's start with what is the news? You were telling us about a strike in Sudbury.
The strike in Sudbury by the steel workers against Vale is still going on. After the first rejection, the membership there voted 70% against a contract that was recommended to them, and they voted it down because it was going to maintain and extend the tier system so that anybody hired in the future would have no health care benefits after they retire. So in solidarity with those workers that have not yet been hired, the workers turned down the contract offer and went on strike. Vale, I guess somewhat chastened, decided to improve their offer, and they brought another offer back that was voted on a week ago, last Monday. But this time, the bargaining committee recommended against the offer because it still didn't provide equality for all workers. It still didn't get rid of the tier system. So in that sense, both the membership and the leadership now have strengthened their resolve to fight against the two-tier system. And this time the workers voted down the offer by 87%. And so they are now settled in to a very determined strike. And of course, we've seen some very long strikes in Sudbury in the past. I don't know if this is going to be one or not, but I would hope that workers around the province and around the country would start rallying to show solidarity with this group of workers who are up against a really nasty, tough, wealthy multinational corporation.
And in a province now run by conservatives, which is always makes for bad medicine because they are not exactly friendly to unions and on issues like the one that's being fought over. I'm interested, very often, did that vote come about because the company insisted on it or something? Or how would that, because they must have told them this is not going to fly.
I don't know the details of that. I read some accounts of the offer and the vote. It could be that the leadership wanted to show the company that they were against the offer and the membership was backing them up.
I'm glad you pointed out that it might have something to do with it being nickel country. I don't know, but the strikes up there tend to be long and rough. Yeah, that's Sudbury really has a history, so we should watch that closely. That's a natural segue to ask you about the Canadian Labor Congress, because the strikers in this case, their union is a member of the Canadian Labor Congress. And actually, enduring struggles of this type, we haven't, let's put it this way, CLC has been pretty low profile. And so we now have new leadership. Give us a sense of who they are, and maybe we should be sending them a message. Please get involved with the Sudbury struggle over, particularly addressing, as the Canadian Labor Congress, the tier system.
Sure. The new leadership really does seem to have a better perspective. Of course, that wouldn't be hard given the previous so-called leader of the CLC, Hassan Youssef, who was installed really by Unifor, that spent $1 million to bus people a few years ago to the CLC convention to make sure that he was elected. And he turned out to be a real dud. He ended up palling around with the Liberal Party, inviting Trudeau and his hangers-on to address union meetings, and really not putting up a fight at all against the Liberal Party, which represents the ruling class of this country, and no workers should support that. The new leadership is a woman named Bea Brusk, who is the new president of the CLC. Lily Chang is the new secretary treasurer, and Shobhan Vipond is the new CLC executive vice president, and Larry Russo, who was previously an executive vice president, was reelected, but on a team with those three women. So like the OFL, the CLC is now led by women unionists, who I think have a much better perspective and give some confidence that there'll be more effort to rally workers, show solidarity. And one of the best signs of the better political perspective of this new leadership is the strong support for people of Palestine. And a resolution that was passed unanimously or almost unanimously in support of Palestinians. And this has been a really controversial issue in the labor movement in the past, but there was no controversy about it this time.
Just to jump in, we're really glad to be talking to you, Tony Leo, because over the Taylor Report, because I don't see the Canadian media running to tell me this. And let's do an historical thing that just to show that labor has a history. At the Ontario Federation of Labor, and I think it was 1984, somewhere like that, due to the initiative of steelworkers and a number of other good unions, a resolution was brought to the OFL and calling for the recognition of the Palestine Liberation Organization. And boy, the Globe and Mail told us about that one. It was page one. So now all these years later, this happens, and they chose not to report it so far. I haven't seen any emphasis on it, whereas it should be. Certainly it's remarkable. And it's not the only resolution to do with, I think they had something on Gaza. They had something on ethnic cleansing, separate resolutions.
Yeah. And in fact, there was a statement about the attacks on Gaza and labeling it as ethnic cleansing back in May that came from the Canadian Labour Congress. And the resolution supporting Palestinian human rights is really strong. It calls for a ban on goods produced and exported from settlements in the occupied territories. It calls on Canadian companies to end complicity with the occupation of Palestine and siege on Gaza. It calls on the Canadian government to halt arms sales to Israel and play an active role in ensuring Palestinians and Israelis' rights to live in safety. And it supports divestment actions against Canadian companies known to export military security goods to the Israeli Defense Forces. And of course, the divestment, the boycott divestment sanctions movement has been gaining strength, and is really, I think, significant and positive that the official labor body of Canada, the Canadian Labor Congress, has endorsed BDS. And I think that makes it a lot harder for the Liberals and the Conservatives to label BDS as anti-Semitism, which of course is just a smokescreen.
It is, and again, this is, we're going to live through a period here of watching to see how they cover this. And we have to acknowledge it. The coverage of union activity, strike activity, whatnot, has been falling off in recent years. It's really been treated as, frankly, a pedestrian issue. This is something those who own those papers don't think we should know. There was also legislation, resolutions for some other matters. I believe they took a stand on anti-scab legislation.
Yes. Yeah. There were a wide range of really positive resolutions that tied together what the actions that the labor movement needs to take in solidarity with the political demands that need to be made to support the working class movement, including passing legislation against the use of scabs and including an endorsement of the NDP, which was a rebuke to unions that have tried to cozy up to the Liberals and pretend that that's progressive. And that went through as well.
You know, I'm really glad you touched on that. We should review this matter of how the Hassan Youssef period, because as you mentioned, in a way it was I guess I can't think of another expression, a kind of a con that Hassan was supposed to be representing, you know, new ideas, and he was going to be, you know, the progressive darling. But it was apparent very quickly, and many people didn't buy it in the first place, but that he had a, frankly, what do they call it? A conflict of interest with Unifor, because Unifor, while Hassan Youssef was there, made two serious attempts to raid major unions, members of the Canadian Labour Congress. And Hassan, while he did a couple of times say he didn't think that was nice or whatever, but, well, in the case of the transit workers, he rather connived in it, didn't he?
Absolutely, he did. It was a setup from the get-go. Jerry Dias and Unifor leadership were preparing in secret an attempt to raid the ATU. They thought that they had a deal cut with the local president who was going to cooperate with them. And of course, as these matters always happen, people that want to cooperate with the raiding think that they're going to get really lucrative staff jobs with Unifor. And so self-interest is tied into it. And when they launched the raid, Hassan Youssef, without any authorization from anybody else in the CLC, declared that the ATU was going to be denied protection under the anti-raiding rules of the CLC. He had no authority to do that, but it was, it was clearly set up because he was installed by Unifor and he was doing what they wanted. And it blew up in his face because the rest of the executive of the CLC put a stop to that in pretty short order. I want to mention something about the ATU as well that ties some of these points together because, of course, the leadership of Unifor, Jerry Dias and his cronies, like to pretend that they're the progressive part of the labor movement and disparage other unions and other union leaders, and they were very disparaging about the ATU. There was a letter sent to Justin Trudeau just at the beginning of June, also supporting Palestinian rights, calling for ending our complicity as Canadians with the government of Israel, calling for the immediate suspension of bilateral trade of arms. And that letter was signed by the Ontario Federation of Labour. It was signed by a number of important national unions in Canada, including the Public Service Alliance of Canada, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, the Canadian Federation of Nurses. I think it's pretty significant that they signed on. And it was signed by the Amalgamated Transit Union of Canada, the ATU. It was not signed by Unifor, by the way. Here's a very important step forward in building international solidarity and recognizing the rights of workers not being tied in with the liberals or other representatives of the ruling class that want to cooperate with whatever the U.S. Foreign policy is demanding of them. And, and the ATU was issued a statement saying they were proud to sign on to that statement. So there's some real progress here. And if I could take another second to contrast that with the Unifor leadership position, and I don't think that they're really speaking for the members of Unifor, certainly not speaking for the members I know in Oshawa, but they always seem in all of these disputes to come down on the side of corporations. Group, the Labor Against the Arms Trade, sent a letter to Jerry Dias asking him to confront the issue that its Unifor members in London who are manufacturing light armored vehicles that are being sent to Saudi Arabia. And there's not been a peep out of Jerry Dias because they hide behind the issue of, oh, it's jobs. We have to be for our members' jobs. But why is it that they always arrive at the position that the way to protect jobs is to line up behind the corporations and what the corporations want. Why do we have to have jobs by defending pipelines? Why do we have to have jobs in Boat Harbor, Nova Scotia, by disregarding the rights of the indigenous community there and supporting the pulp mill, which wants to keep putting effluent into the bay? Why do we have to support jobs by getting behind fishers, lobster fishers, who are attacking and brutalizing indigenous people who are trying to assert their rights to a historic fishing for their community? And why do we have to, you know, defend jobs in Oshawa by saying the only way we can have jobs is by supporting General Motors Corporation and giving them more money and making concessions and agreeing to two-tier contracts and lower wages? I think it's really a betrayal. And I would contrast that with the position that Bob White took when he was the leader of the auto workers union in Canada, when he said, you know, if it's an issue, a principled issue like that, we can't hide behind the issue of jobs. He said, we can find workers other jobs. And he supported the demonstration against cruise missile testing in Canada, for example. And he said, if the cruise missile was canceled, obviously it would have some effect on employment in both Canada and the United States. But surely in the world that we live in, we ought to be able to find peaceful production that would replace that.
Yes, I think he got that from the Bible, something about beating swords into plowshares. I don't think that was original Bob White. That's a very good point. And why isn't it obvious? I mean, I can understand that they would point this out and then say, let's make something else. There are a lot of manufacturers. We're here to make things. I mean, at least, and then say, we're going to try to do this. Because if you're going to take that line, as you pointed out, then that answers every question. And there's no progress at all. Because all decisions will be made by our masters. And we say, well, he made the decision. He's the master. I can't really question that. Now, I'm looking after my men. No, you're not. You're selling a whole gang down the road. Have another issue. I should have put it at the top. There was a resolution concerning the New Democratic Party taken at the Canadian Labour Congress. So another little gift that Hassan Youssef brought was, let's call it that by its name, class collaboration. There's two labor leaders I associate in photographs with the Liberal Party. And the Toronto Star made sure I got to see all their pictures. It was Hassan Youssef and Jerry Dias. I never saw anybody else sharing the podium or staring into the eyes of a hypnotic figure. Anyway, but this is big news. And how did Hassan react to the resolution? He was presiding.
Absolutely shameless. He tried to rule that a motion by the labor movement to endorse the NDP, but also to respect the rights of workers in the labor movement in Quebec to make their own independent decision, which was kind of an important part of that resolution. But he said that that resolution was out of order because it violated the CLC constitution. I guess he forgot that in 1961, the New Democratic Party was formed by the CCF and the CLC. I guess, but he wanted to say that endorsing the NDP was a violation of the CLC constitution, that which was voted down. And then when he was asked by a reporter afterwards by the CBC, we hear rumors that you might be getting a Senate appointment. He said, I might have something to contribute there.
I hate to tell him, but some of those senators might say, hey, listen, you promised that wasn't going to happen. and now you're standing here, you want that Senate position. We're thinking maybe you could be deputy something in Ireland, but no, you, they don't always reward, the, you know, the friends who fail them. I mean, you return to the boss and say, look at all the things I did for you. Remember, he supported Morneau, right? When the whole panel said, are you kidding? You can't appoint, Morneau can't get that job. And Hassan Youssef said, oh, I think it's a good idea. And he later said he, maybe that was a mistake, right?
I don't think he ever really backed away from that. He's absolutely shameless.
The man doesn't even know how to sell out. What do you think? Is the Gorbachev period ending in the CLC?
Well, let's hope so. I do have hope for the new leadership.
It is a dramatic story, and I mean, and actually, we could have put that at the top. This NDP resolution, I didn't see that coming. When I was just thinking about having a pulse, because you know it's very hard to get that stuff back once you give them up. It's hard to get it back, right? And do you know something? The vote. How was the vote on that? Do you know how? It was fairly.
Yeah, it was quite strong. The resolution passed about 1,500 to 1,000.
So that's a good margin, but it does show that he was putting his shoulder into that. He does have something he can tell them when they're talking about his Senate job. Look, I tried. I came within 500 votes. I mean, can't do miracles. My old friends, Unifor, who you told to take a walk, they took a walk and all those votes went down the drain. And that's what you get. They took a walk and they thought the CLC was going to die. I mean, the whole idea was, you know, by CLC.
I don't think it's entirely a coincidence that Unifor left the CLC, which includes leaving the provincial federations of labor like the OFL, within a couple of months of losing the same battle at the OFL convention over endorsement of the NDP when the Ontario election was coming up.
I forgot.
Unifor fought really, really hard to try and prevent that resolution at the OFL, and they were defeated. And 2 months later, they were out.
Wow. Let that be a lesson. These Senate appointments don't come easy. You got to work. And they tried their best. And they actually took a walk, of course, after that. That was the end of it, right?
Yeah.
We've been speaking to Tony Leah, political action chairman, right, of Local 222 General Motors, Oshawa. Thank you very much. We're doing this thing about the tier system. I hope that they will take that up at future meetings. Maybe we'll have to go through their records. Perhaps they actually did talk about it, but we have four new leaders and they seem to be the type that might change things. We have to follow them. Now we're going to follow the CLC very closely.